order and, oops, conformal. Quantum critical point for those of you not in the know. So I'll tell you what these things are. There's a lengthy talk by Xiaogan last week on the topological order part. I'll sort of give my version of what that means, and I'll tell you what a conformal quantum critical point and give some examples. So first, what we're looking for, let me give you the motivation. So what we're looking for is topological phases, which we can define in a variety of ways. There's no one good, I think, overriding definition that always will describe everything you want. But anyway, I'll give one which at least I learned from Messner and Sondi, and it's the low energy behavior is described by topological field theory. So that's not a tautology, because a topological field theory is a very precisely defined thing, and roughly speaking, it means the correlators in this topological theory don't depend on space, or one of the things it means. That's good enough for what we need. So that's a topological field theory. And so no matter how far you take different operators apart, nothing happens. So basically, all the correlators have to do with winding and around cycles, or different, say, flux lines winding around each other, that kind of thing. And so that's what a topological phase is, or a topological order. And these kinds of critical points, I'll tell you a little later on why we used all those words. But basically, these will be critical points that separate it. So CQCP separates a topological phase from a boring ordered phase. So I think at this conference, anytime you have conventional order, it's boring, but I'll say that so other speakers don't have to. I'll say that once and for all. It's conventional order is boring.
Topological phase really includes any long
distance. But something
non-trivial.
Okay, yes, right. That's why I said there's no good definition. So non-trivial, without having to define non-trivial. And a topological phase, so it's gaps. So basically, all the stuff we usually look at in theory is all above some gap. So we're going to look at the ground state behavior, and that's what's going to have this.
It has no degrees of freedom.
Degrees of freedom. It has topological degrees of freedom, which is, I mean, that's, but that's.
No propagating
degrees of freedom. Another, these phases, at least many times, maybe all the time, I don't know, are another more heuristic way of thinking of them is this deconfined phase. But with this definition, I don't have to define what's confined and what's deconfined. A third way, if you want to define, is you can say that the number of ground states of the system depends on the genus of the surface, if you're doing two dimensions, it depends on the genus of the surface, which sounds sort of obvious, but then when you think about it in a conventional ordered phase, of course, it's not going to care about the genus of the surface because they'll all be lined up somehow, so who cares, you know, how many cycles they loop around. And in a disordered phase, well, somehow you shouldn't have multiple state. So it's kind of it's almost disordered, but has this little kind of order. So anyway, let me give the. Actually, maybe I'll skip the table. I'll draw the table at the end. So I have a table with a bunch of theories. So a lot of people here have worked on various theories of this type, and I've made a table, which I'll put at the end, tries to summarize it. So let me just give an outline. So I'm going to give a construction of such things. And then the rest will just be examples. And so we'll work our way up order of complication. So abelian lattice models. And then abelian field theories, and then, I guess we can do a subclassigary here, at criticality, and then off criticality, and then last, I'm sure I won't have time to go through this in any detail, but I can mumble something about non-abelian stuff. So it'll be construction of models that have both topological phases and potentially critical points separating them from other phases. Okay, so one of the characteristics that people have learned, what we want to look for, is that we want the ground state. So this, think some model, and then we want some quantum model in some dimensions. In this talk, I'll basically be two-dimensional. So let's just say 2D from now, two spatial dimensions from now on. But a lot of this can be extrapolated to higher dimensions. So we want the ground state to be a sum, and I put it in brackets or quotes because I'll be precise in a second. A sum over, and again, another quote because I'll be precise in a second, over all basis states in your Hilbert space. So this is obviously not a ordered state where your ground state will be one or maybe a couple states. So your ground state is a sum over basically everything in your state with some weights. And if this is not order, obviously, but it can be topological order. Such a model can be just plain old disorder. You can have topological order if the Hamiltonian, so the Hamiltonian that has this ground state, has conservation laws, because then the different states basically are the sum over all states in a given sector consistent with those conservation laws. So that's the basic trick. Doesn't sound very fancy, and it's not, but
you also want the ground state to be independent of the value of the conserved quantity.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. So these.
Does that mean in each charged sector, the ground
state
should be the same?
Yeah, so say E equals zero. In fact, all the models that we'll construct have E equals zero. So you have a bunch of E equals zero states. Well, but then they're just distinguished by different conservation laws. Okay, so that's why the Hamiltonian makes super selection sectors.
You always say momentum is conserved and ground state is zero momentum, and that's not topological order.
Because
you change the momentum,
you change the state. But the examples we have won't be like that. That's right. All right, so first I'll do the abstract part. And luckily, Xiaogan gave a nice long talk that is far more abstract than mine, so I won't apologize. But this is the abstract part of the talk, basically the construction. And if it seems a little abstract, I'll get very concrete after I finish this part. But basically, what we're going to do is start with the trick or the construction is to start with a 2D classical model. And I use the generic word model because we'll do field theories and lattice models. And then we take a state, any state in the classical model. So when I say 2D from now on, I mean the 2D classical model. And we take any state in this 2D classical model and is a basis state in the 2 plus 1, or in the Erich-Schwitz, the 2D quantum model, which I'll call 2 plus 1 in an abuse of the usual thing, because these theories are not going to be Lorentz invariant. But anyway, they're quantum two-dimensional theories. So it's a little bit of a bizarre notion. So think of your favorite 2D lattice model, the Ising model, the dimer model is one people have used a lot. Classical dimers. Each dimer configuration is a basis element to the Hilbert space of this quantum two-dimensional model. So all the states are linear combinations of the basis states of this dimer model, say. Okay. And so, in other words, or in an equation, I should say, what we mean is our state. A state is just some sum with some weight. And so again, each classical state is some basis state, and then it's some sum over all states. And I'm just generically calling these things spins. They can be fields, they can be dimers, they can be whatever you want, just whatever the degrees of freedom are, and your sum over there. So this is just an arbitrary state in this quantum two-dimensional theory, this 2 plus 1 dimensional theory. So anyway, what we want is a quantum Hamiltonian. So this is generic, but what we want is a quantum Hamiltonian. So that now psi naught, or there's probably more than one psi naught, but I'll just label them all by a zero, is again this sum over these with these weights here. Sum over all that, but such that W has certain properties. So let's call that W. Well, let's call it just W naught. Yes. And what we want W naught equals zero, or W naught not equals zero for, say, all states, again, in some sector. And the sector is given by the symmetries of H. And now what we want, so that, again, doesn't sound so strange, but what we're going to demand here is we want W naught to be what I'll call local. And so what that means is if you want to think of W, write W as some Boltzmann weight. So again, it's a some function of all the spins here. And it's some Boltzmann weight that we usually write this way. These E are the Boltzmann weights, or E are the energies, W are the Boltzmann weights of a local two-dimensional classical model. So,
anything positive?
No, I don't have to. E can be imaginary. Doesn't have. I didn't say unitary model. I just said local. 2D local classical. Yes, I'm aware of that. But I said it didn't have to be unitary. A 2D local classical model. So this is actually really weird. I mean, usual theory, you do this for phi to the fourth theory, obviously. So if everything up to here can just talk about phi to the fourth theory, but phi to the fourth theory won't have this condition if I write it in this fashion.
Sorry, yeah. A trivial question. Does the statement W0 not equal zero all states in a sector mean that W0 is non-zero for all states, or that it is not zero for all states?
It's not zero for all. I'm sorry. The point is, let me just explain the point, and this will probably answer your question. It just means that it's a sum over states. Like, it's not just one for a particular state and then zero for everything else. It's just, it just sums all these together. That's
because every W zero is not zero.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. It's a blackboard talk. Oh, yeah. For all S1. Yeah, there we go. See, I like that upside down egg. It's fun to write that. Okay.
In a sector.
In a sector. Well, that's still there.
What are all the topological theories have this problem?
I think all the ones we know, I was about to explain why. So this is an important piece of intuition, which actually I think I learned from Mike, which pointed out that since the interactions are local, since this is local by this definition, you can hope for some operators, set of local operators, this is the index of locality, or you could say Q of X, which annihilate the ground state. And what I learned from Mike, the point is you expect this kind of thing if you're looking for a topological phase, because a topological phase has all these properties. Remember I said the correlators don't depend on space. So that's a very restrictive property. So you might hope there's some condition that says that locally all this stuff has to be going on in order so that you can deform stuff, you can move things around, and nothing changes. And so there have to be a lot of extra conditions. Field theorists are familiar with this kind of thing. It's like a BRST charge, which says that the physical states, or the ground state, and this particular physical state have to obey some local constraint. So that's not a proof of anything, but that's why we might hope to find this. And then the point is if such a thing exists, so this is coming to the end of the abstract part, if such Q exists, we can find now a Hamiltonian that has this thing. So this is why it's a construction. So then if we take H to be sum over all this QI, qi dagger, then this annihilates this psi naught by construction, and psi naught is the ground state because this the energy is greater than or equal to zero in this case by construction because it's H is a sum of positive
integer.
You don't have to make it. You could do that. You can have Q squared is equal to zero, but you don't have to. So these are sort of generalized projectors. If Q were a projector, then this would just be Q, but there's some version of it. And so what this says now is something even better. So this is great. And what it says is that correlators in the ground state of this 2D quantum theory, so this thing going 2 plus 1, are then just equal to correlators in this 2D classical theory. And that may not seem obvious, but let me write out a typical correlator. Correlators in the ground, equal time correlators. Yeah. So in other words, we've got some bunch of phis, bunch of fields. And so that's our correlator in the ground state. And what it says, well, you sum over all the basis states weighted by this psi squared and with all these phi, and then normalized by the sum over psi naught squared. But remember, we wrote this out. This is just e to the minus beta e plus e star in our classical theory. So that's exactly the sum you would, and this is just z, if you wish, of e plus e star, the partition function of a theory where the Boltzmann weights are not e, but e plus its complex conjugate. This is a trick that, well, this is a the square is something that will come back at the end of maybe haunt us if I get to the end of my talk. What? Yeah. Okay, so that's the abstract part. So let me, is that open?
I understand the part where you introduce this Q that analyzes the ground area and this stuff, but I'm still not clear on why the existence of Q means there's a stat-mech model that defines a local stat-mech model that defines your wave function.
No. Well, that's the assumption. We have a stat-mech model, and we find the set of Q that annihilates that Boltzmann weights of that stat-mech model. So if you wish, we're going backwards. We're starting with our favorite 2D stat-mech model, say the dimer model, and we look for a Q such that
hoping that every topological phase has an equivalent stat-mech model.
I'm hoping, but I don't know of any counterexamples to that. But that, no, that's the grandiose list of questions that I deferred till the end. That is this generic? I mean, like I say, you expect some sort of constraints. Now, whether they can always be solved and all that, but the the thing is, we want to be more general than just a topological field theory because we want a full theory. So the idea is to construct sort of plausible models that then have this as their ground state. And
it's true of the ground state.
All the states in the topological theory are the ground states. Right. I mean, so yeah.
Well, you mentioned about the sectors. Whether the constraint on the sector can be implemented in a
singular fashion,
the local
interaction. Absolutely. All these are complications when you want to try and do that. So let me give some examples where you can get the work. So that was the idea. These are some examples where this works. So, yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment or ask a question. I'm not sure which about whether this is all the examples. So one way of interpreting the definitions you gave for sketch would be that you'd only get central charge zero T2FTs this much.
Is that right? Okay, I believe that.
If the Qs depended only on local degrees of freedom on the surface and not some external field, then they would transform with the surface. So the mapping class group would act directly on the ground state rather than the central extension of the mapping class group.
Okay.
Which is a hallmark of fractional quantum Hall theories.
Okay.
So you wouldn't expect to be able to
jump. Okay, when you've got something non-trivial at the boundary base, is that correct rephrasing that this wouldn't encompass theories with non-trivial boundary?
But
sectors like in gapless, like in the Hall effect.
I don't think so.
Okay. That's probably right. That's probably, yeah, that's, I buy that.
You're not saying that it's just non-tribal theories, you're saying more than that. You can have a non-tribal massive system which is, which corresponds to a non-zero single class. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
sure.
Is the choice to write the amplitudes in terms of the Boltzmann weight of a classical model, is that somehow inspired by Laughlin's plasma gas?
Yeah, you can view that. In fact, you can view pretty much everything in this be inspired by trying to find a non-chiral version of the Hall effect. So I should have said that anyway at the beginning. Yeah, you can think of that. Actually, another inspiration is the quantum dimer model, which is another one. I guess going back to Roxar Kivelson was probably the first people to write that. Akaltique states are like that. So in the late 80s, people were doing similar ideas. And now it's just one of the points is basically everything anybody's done in this arena, as far as I know, amounts to that. So let's at least, you know, that's the trick. I mean, whether that's the trick that works, you know, because it's the one that's simple and thus we're just lucky, or it's really something general, I don't know. But anyway. Okay, so let me just give one lattice model, since I don't have a ton of time, I don't want to dwell on it. But one lattice model that people like me like very much, it's called the 8-vertex model. And so there's 8, so you've got arrows on the links of a square lattice. And you require that at each vertex there be an even number of arrows in and an even number out. So that gives 8 vertices. I've drawn 4 of them. The other 4 just reverse all the arrows on at a given vertex. So that makes 8 of the 16 possibilities. So you throw out half of them, keep the other half. And you give Boltzmann weights, which from time immemorial, i.e. from Baxter's day, are given by 8 called A, B, C, and D. Oh, the important thing that reminded me. I should have said this work I've been describing, or I'm about to describe, is mostly in a paper with Eddie Ardon and Eduardo Fradkin. And so this is where this model I'm about to describe appears, or our version of this model. This sort of various versions of this model have appeared. But anyway, so we've got configurations that, since I don't have time, you just put these on the lattice. And the point is to define now our Q. If I define Q to act on each plaquette, and we have a flip operator, so QI, so I is a plaquette variable. And let me define the flip operator. Basically, take all the arrows around a plaquette, which any can happen, and it flips all of them around. So this one I drew would do that. So that's the flip operator. And so if you then we can write QI, the operators QI I talked about a few minutes ago, as a potential, which maybe I won't, well, if people want to see it, I'll write it out explicitly. It's not particular. Well, let me write it out. So Q is some potential, so it's a diagonal term, minus the flip operator on that plaquette. And let's write out what the potential is, just so you can see. It's a completely bizarre looking fine-tuned potential, but I'll write what it is. So let's go, in order to get something that's isotropic in the two dimensions. So remember, again, we're doing this bizarre idea. We're taking a 2D classical model, and we're finding a quantum Hamiltonian acting on the Hilbert space, which is made up of the basis of this 2D classical model. And if we want the space to be rotationally invariant, at least under 90 degrees, we better make sure that that weight equals that weight, because this one is just that one rotated by 90 degrees. These two rotating into themselves. So we'll set the two equal to each other, and we can normalize the overall scale to be 1. And then we have these two. And let me just write out what the answer is so you can't accuse me of skipping the details. So then the VI, sorry, is equal to C. Let's say what these mean in a second. So C and D are those Boltzmann weights of the lattice model, and then NC and NC tilde, this is the number of C vertices on that plaquette. This one is the number of C vertices on the flipped plaquette. And then likewise for ND, same for the D vertices. So it's not pretty. There's no particular reason why anyone in a million years would have looked at this potential, except for the reason we did, which is that it annihilates this QI. Has each QI annihilates this configuration, the sum W, we'll call it W naught, S1 to Sn, sum over all states, where this is the classical Boltzmann weights of the 8 vertex model, the things I just wrote down, the A, B, C, and D. So that's why we did such a thing. People have, in fact, the model Joel talked about a couple of weeks ago can be written as a quantum 8 vertex model, but not with the same potential. So anyway, so now we can use, so now remember all the correlators in this model are the same as the correlators in the 8 vertex model, in the classical model. So we can now just write down the phase diagram by using Baxter's book. And what the phase diagram is, it looks like this. So the squiggle lines will be critical lines. Okay, and if you want, that's values 2. I've labeled the axes by C squared and D squared because of the squaring you have to do. Remember, is E plus E star. E is real here. So these are critical lines separating. This is a topological phase, so Baxter just said it's disordered. But one of the things this flip does is preserve the number of arrows in any row mod 2, right? Because if I flip these two arrows, I should say number of, say, right arrows in a given row by 2, and same actually with horizontal. So those give you the different topological sectors. This is just the boring ordered phase. And these are critical lines separating them. This line here is what people would call the 6 vertex model. So other points people have looked at, there was a paper by Matthew and I think it was, maybe it was Mike, I don't remember, people looking at an equal amplitude 6 vertex model, which was that one. There's a famous model of Kataev's, which sits right there. The quantum dimer model that Messner and Sondi, well, Roxar, going back to Roxar and Kivelson, looked at, and then Messner and Sondi generalized the triangle lattice, is actually not quite in this diagram, but it's in the same universality class as a point along this line here, the point where basically it turns into free fermions.
The critical point of the dimer model.
The critical point, the square lattice quantum dimer model, and then I'll, if I have...
That's the point, not the generic dimer model.
No, the critic, sorry, the Roxar Kivel, it wasn't
so
precise.
The critical point of the dimer model seems quite complicated, right? That's what other people look at more recently.
No, the other people look more recently have pointed that there's all these unstable directions to this critical point. But
there is, yeah.
Well, no, but so the critical point itself is in the same critical point as this is here. But it's when you move off the critical point. So the square lattice critical Roxar-Kivelson quantum dimer model is...
Right.
Is
so my question is, how stable is this 8 vertex phase diagram to other...
Well, so it presumably has all the same issue as Roxar, there's nothing more stable. There's no additional symmetries. We've got the Z2 symmetries here. I mean, one could conceivably play these games and attempt to find additional symmetries in the lattice model that would then protect you against these relevant operators in the field theory. But our aim here was more than, I think it's that's all the same. What we want is get all this stuff in the same phase diagram, and in particular that point is a special point that I'm sure someone else will talk about. This point is basically, not basically, is A equals B equals C equals D equals 1. So in the classical model it's infinite temperature, and then this sum, this W's are all just 1. And so it's really just the sum over all configurations, and that's a special point, and that point is very solvable.
That's the Kataev.
That's the Kataev model, which is a, that's...
This
is ordered again. So there's just, it's, you can, there's a lattice, you can basically interchange C and D and nothing
is there
happens.
Any point for your down those values at a comparative point where the various qi commute with each other?
You know, I've thought a lot about this line here, and I have. They don't quite commute, but maybe one can do something. There's all this interest. Now, there's a self-dual line there that should something special should happen, but I can't figure out what.
The commutator is just a mess.
Yeah, the commutator is a mess in general. I haven't checked directly that question along this line, except at this point where everything commutes. Yeah. And, well, at least not that I've found. I mean, because this thing is horrible. I mean, you gotta.
The critical lines are not a gap, are they?
No, these are critical lines. They're not.
So for the quantum model, still gap on the critical line.
There's no gap. Well, I shouldn't say it's algebraic correlations decay, which we assume means no gap. We haven't proven there's no gap because we're not Lorentz invariant, so you can't prove.
You can still do single mode approximation. Well,
yeah.
Get an upper bound.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's not.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. We didn't do that, but if I'm guessing if one did that, you would get it. But we didn't do that. That's right. How much time do I got left? About 15 minutes. Okay, so sorry, I don't want to rush through. So now I want to do field theories. I think I do field theory for a living. So along these lines, we have field theories because they're critical, and so we want to understand what field theories are. Describing those, and then that's right. Well, yeah.
Paul, what does one of the ordered phases look like?
In the lattice model, it's just anti-ferroelectric order. So the arrows, I think, along here would alternate. This is just Z2, so you can do that. So they would just the C vertex is favored. So let's just go along this line. So there's no D vertices. So that D vertex was the source, basically, where there's 4 arrows pointing out or 4 arrows pointing in. So C is the vertex that looks like that. Okay. So what it is, basically, when you're along here, obviously, you're favoring that over A and B. So you're getting this kind of, that kind of anti-ferroelectric order. So that's the ordinary order that melts when you cross that line.
The other one is just everybody out and everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's this Z2 spontaneously broken phase. Right. So.
And topological paper, 4-4 degeneracy
and torus. Yeah, it's same deal. Same deal. Although, well, if you really, I guess you'd have to lift. I mean, there's actually an infinite number of conservation laws here because the way it's on the square lattice, and you can presumably lift them. Well, so if you took this model literally, then there would be lots of phases because, and you took the boundary conditions on the torus to be every row attached to itself, but you can get rid of that, say, by taking slightly tilted boundary conditions, right? You attach one row to one row over. Because there's this conservation.
Let me just take the simplest case.
Okay, because you have this conservation law that preserves arrows in every row and every column with this. It's the same for the square lattice quantum dimer model.
Then why do you call it Z2 then?
Well, because I can easily get rid of that by doing what I just said. If I take my periodic boundary conditions to be slightly skew, so row 1 matches row 2, and then you mess up the... The only non-diagonal term in the Hamiltonian flips all the arrows around a plaquette.
Z2 to the perimeter, if you wish.
Perimeter, but like I say, I can junk that just by taking because it conserves the number of arrows at every row and every column. But I can junk that by skewing the boundary. Yeah. But what we would like to get the topological phase is two Z2s, basically one this way and one that way if you're on the torus, and so the boundary conditions I just gave will do that. For example. Okay. All right, so let me just talk about the field theory version of this, which is actually something.
The normal timer model, this extra conservation laws in the end leads up to reducing the critical phase, the topological phase, to a point. When you do get it more generically, I mean, here. Are you
no, well, the topological phase. Well, I don't understand. It's not the topological phase. You mean you're talking about on the triangular lattice? You're talking about still purely square lattice?
Square
lattice. Well, that's what I said. It is a point. That is a point.
It's got a gap.
That is a point.
It's on the line that
right. That's the point. That's the point you're worried about. I'm way over here.
But you still got this. You've got this continuum. I mean, you've got this integer winding number. Right?
What? You can easily get rid of those if you want. I mean, just by adding a term that doesn't affect the local dynamics and lifts all of those in Keeble. I mean, that's not a problem. I don't think it's a problem, Harry. All right, so let's do the field theory version of this. So what Chris Henley, who's Chris is somewhere, we're there. pointed out a while ago in the context of the dimer model and applies here is, in fact, if you take the field theory, let me write down the Hamiltonian. A 2 plus 1 dimensional field theory, again, that's not Lorentz invariant, but you have a very bizarre action. So instead of the usual del phi squared term in the field theory, I want to put a minus sign there. So I guess the Hamiltonian, I'm going to call that pi squared, where pi is phi dot when you do canonical quantization. So you skip the usual del phi squared, and you just keep the del squared phi squared term. That describes the physics of the, well, it came up there in the context of the quantum dimer model, which is a particular point on the line. But this Hamiltonian actually has a free parameter, this kappa. And basically, this kappa describes the critical line. That was known for a while, but one of the observations that I don't think was at least not widely appreciated, which we put in our paper, was that you can actually, this is of the same type, this model, which came up phenomenologically, is in fact of the same type as this general construction I did before. And the way you do this is use the functional Schrodinger picture. Oh, sorry, that's this Hamiltonian, sorry. No, yeah, that was, I wrote the Lagrangian in my notes for some reason and changed. Sorry, old habits die hard, and I'm still a particle theorist, what can I say? I try. By the way, this is a z equals 2 theory, as is obvious, because there's not the usual stiffness term. Anyway, so if we go to the functional Schrodinger picture, so in other words, what instead of doing field theory, the usual first or second quantized way, someone dubbed this third quantization, which I don't like, but it's a good thing to remember. Oh, that's right, I'm on tape. I can't say stuff like that. I don't know, I'm on tape. Anyway, So when you go to the functional Schrodinger picture, what you do is what you do in the usual first quantized picture, which is you write pi of x, the canonical momentum, as d by d phi, and just like P in quantum mechanics is d by dx, or I d by dx. So now our degrees of freedom are fields. We have wave functionals now of phi in this picture. So again, so our classical fields are dynamical variables, and we have a wave functional of that classical degree of freedom. And if we write now q of x equals d by d phi plus kappa del squared phi, in fact, then the Hamiltonian I wrote right there is just d2x. So this depends on, I should be careful, this is a two-dimensional spatial variable. So again, those are canonical variables. And in the functional Schrodinger picture, then the Hamiltonian we can just write in the form like this. So this Hamiltonian is exactly one of the Hamiltonians I did before. Well, if I can do one more thing, which is find a solution.
But you're only looking at the critical point at this stage?
Right now, it's just the critical point. Yeah, we'll go off critical. Well, in the last, how much time do I have left? 5 minutes. All right, well, in the last minute, I'll go off the critical point. So if we can find a solution to that equation, we have a ground state, and we can find a solution to that equation. It's just state. Well, in fact, instead of writing the sum, I'll get all fancy and field theoretical and write it this way. All right, and David, I think, just did it in his head. And the answer is where S is equal, so times all the states. So that's labeled by phi. And so S is just the Gaussian action in 2D. So the ordinary del phi squared that we know and love, I guess there's a kappa in front, probably a 2, but let's not worry about that.
And what's the winding number in this number?
What's the winding number? Conserved quantity. So up to these, there's this infinite number of ones you're worried about. What do I do with the zero mode of phi? Yeah, well, that's Sabir's question. Well, so those are all ground states, right? In this case, all right. So here it's clearly an issue. But we're not in the topological phase. I'm still at the critical point. So we're at the critical point. Yeah, so there's many multiply infinite degeneracy of these sectors that I talked about before. I can remove that, and I will. what this says, and this is the reason for the title, this conformal quantum critical point. So any correlator in this theory, so the theory that Chris wrote down as a phenomenological description, so it's quadratic, so you can solve this in any way. But the suggestive way of solving this theory for us is to do it this way, because now any correlator in this quantum ground state is then in the ground state is just this correlator in the C equals 1 conformal field theory or free Gaussian. And so this critical point has a funny kind of conformal invariance. The wave function is conformally invariant. So this is along this line. So not just the theory has a conformal invariance, but the wave function is 2D conformally invariant. So that's what we meant by a conformal quantum critical point. So in other words, you transform the fields phi in the wave function, and they're invariant under any conformal transformation. So any correlator, all the correlators are given by this in this conformal field theory, and so you can pick your favorite operator in this 2D quantum model and compute its correlator in the ground state. Okay. So last thing to make Shabir happy and get into this topological phase. So this is this whole critical line here, for that matter. By duality, it's that critical line too, or any of these. And you can derive the relation of kappa to these parameters here.
But
if you wish.
Doesn't mean that along that critical line, they're continuously varying.
That's right, critical exponents, and that's why how you can match, in fact, the value of C and D in the eight vertex model to the kappa I gave here. So
that's sort of neat. I mean, it's plus something.
Right. So
model with continuously.
All right. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, so yeah, there's the question. Well, I might as well say it now since I'm almost at the end. Yeah, whether this is generic or it's just, I mean, any models that have this topological phase are going to behave in this fashion, so have all this nice Z equals 2 properties and just turn into conformal field theory, ordinary 2D conformal field theories, and have their critical properties be related, or this is just a fluke because these are the only ones we know how to make some analytic progress on. But yeah, it's amazing that this works. This is a real 2+1 dimensional model. It's just a very special one. And now to go off the critical point, let me just finish. See, this whole trick gives you a way of doing this now. Because now if you ask the question in Baxter's, well, Baxter never writes about field theory, but if you try and write a field theory description of this eight vertex model, you can ask what field theory is going to describe the 2D model, the 2D classical model near the critical line. And that field theory is well known. It's just Sine-Gordon. So off the critical point, the theory is Sine-Gordon. And so this is the 2D classical. So you just have the Sine-Gordon action, which I guess is right, del squared plus lambda cosine phi. OK, so that's the 2D classical statement. In the quantum dimer model, in fact, there's a paper by Roderick, Messner and Shivajisani and I, where we showed how basically what happens there, the field theory is free fermions at the critical point, and to go off the critical point when you go into the triangular lattice, so that moves you into the topological phase, corresponds to a mass term for the fermions in that picture. And this is just a bosonized version, bosonized and generalized version of that picture. Anyway, so if we do that, and then we take our Q, so we just generalize this Q to be the same thing we had before. I don't remember if I had a minus sign there or not, but I do now. And just add that piece. Then you get psi is the e to the minus s sine Gordon, you know, times the states. Right? And so that answers Shabir's question. So that kills all this infinite ground state degeneracy you're worried about. Well, now it's a discrete one. Yeah, but that's a, right. So you can add a tiny magnetic field if you want to cover that.
The difference sign of lambda give a two different phases. If lambda takes different sign, you'll get a different phase, topological phase, and orbital phase.
That's right. Depend on the sign. Yeah, it's the sign of lambda in this picture. That's right. And God knows which is the correct sign. No, I'm sorry. No, it's not the sign of lambda.
Yeah, maybe it is, because in one case you have ground state.
No, but this operator is relevant, so it's... Oh, yeah, I guess... Yeah, it's got to... Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. That's right.
Can you move both directions off gravity with it?
Certainly, effectively, you can. So it depends, I think... I remember being confused by this. I think the answer is actually you have to use phi and phi dual, but I don't remember. Let me think about it. There's certainly no reason why you shouldn't be able to, but I realize that's not a good answer. Because the real question is whether you're going into an ordered phase or not, and then you have to worry about how to describe the ordered states in terms of phi, and it gets, it doesn't get funny. You just have to be careful, and I don't remember the answer.
But I mean, if you wanted to describe the topologically ordered phase, it's going to be pretty non-trivial, isn't it? I mean, at least I think about it in these variables when you're depending on these minima of the cosine, or is that, does that actually give a correct?
Well, you don't get. I don't think you get pinned in the minima.
No, it's lambda. But you said lambda is relevant.
Lambda is definitely relevant. Well, that's what. I'm trying to remember what happens over here. I better. I don't remember what happens over there. The. Yeah, there's. Yeah, I'm trying to remember how to go into the ordered phase. The problem is, or the disorder. I mean, there's an Ising duality. So this is what the confusion. Right, in the Ising model, it's the same perturbation that takes you, just different sign that takes you into the, if you wish, ordered versus disordered phase, right? So the point is what happens in here, I mean, these are dual to each other. So here, the thing that, over here, there's order in the disorder variables, right, in the usual kind of way. Here, there's order in the ordered variables. I mean, just Ising duality, I mean, it's literally identical to that.
So you have to perturb with a dual field.
So you have to just pay attention to which one you're perturbing with is the dual field or the, but in terms of the fermions, the Ising, it's always psi bar psi, but it's whether mu has constant correlators or sigma has constant correlators. So it's the same thing here. In fact, the only complication, there's two Ising fields at C equals one, if you wish. So you just have to keep track of how the phi we wrote down is related to mu, and that's a definition. I mean, so I could have equivalently written this in terms of phi dual and then changed all the definitions around. But you just have to keep, that's why. So I think if in terms of, one of them corresponds to cosine phi and the other corresponds to cosine phi dual, but I won't swear to that, but we can, that's easy to figure out. All right, so let me start. So the non-abelian case, so let me just say, so this trick already may seem special enough, but the depressing part is this trick doesn't even always work. So the two main obstacles are in a lattice model, you can always find a Q. So take your favorite 2D lattice model, but the resulting Hamiltonian may not be ergodic. And By that I mean it won't get you through some large set of configurations so that you can sum over all of them, even without this issue of there's too many symmetries in your Hamiltonian. So you remember you want the sum over all states within some sector, but if your Hamiltonian doesn't, so you want a Hamiltonian. You can always find a Q by basically you define some kind of flip and then weight it appropriately so that Q will annihilate the state with the classical Boltzmann weights. But the problem is that the Hamiltonian may form by this construction basically may have extra ground states and that lots of states aren't flippable. So in the quantum dimer model, so in this state, in this model, every plaquette can be flipped, so you turn the arrows around. But in the quantum dimer model, for example, you can only flip configurations that are two dimers on opposite lengths, and then you can flip them to that and back and forth. But if you take other lattices with dimers, for example, the simplest flip you'll define won't step you through all states. There'll be lots of states that have no flippable plaquettes. And this, as you make your lattice models more complicated, in particular trying to do non-abelian ones, this problem gets bad. The other problem is...
Can't you deal with that by just introducing some sort of longer range?
Right, exactly. But the question is then, how long a range do you have? We're trying to maintain some semblance of realism here. Only a semblance, but... I mean, if you have to have... No, but the point is, if you have to have long... The point is we want local, and it's not at all...
It just be a few like that.
Yeah, it may just be... In many cases, it probably is, but I you know, of course...
Like models, model like this on the Kagame.
Yeah, Kagame is fine, but the problem there wasn't this. In fact, in their case, every plaquette was flippable, well, but that's...
But you didn't know... The work with Chetney... There's actually a very interesting mathematical problem. We don't know any of the size that we can rigorously prove are
not a computer size. You can't prove in any.
Computer studies seem to show that the very smallest movements are ergodic on the one hand, but on the other hand, even allowing moves covering the entire blackboard, we don't know rigorous proof that it's ergodic.
Right. So it's an open question. So it may be possible with with nearest neighbor and next nearest neighbor, you're good. But if you have to add arbitrarily long, that violates our locality thing, and the whole point is to construct a local. So this may be a solvable problem. This is just a thing. The second one is in field theories, you do have interesting cases with complex amplitudes. For example, models with theta terms or Wessamino-Witten terms. The Wessamino-Witten term has an I in front of it when you're in Euclidean space, but so when you square it, because this is quantum mechanics, the I term with the I goes away, the Wessamino-Witten term goes away, so you have, that's the principal chiral model, that's not critical. So this, you'll still get some model, but we don't know how to get non-abelian critical points, at least not through this construction. So that's an open problem. You can get non-abelian topological phases. That'll be the last thing I'll say. You can get non-abelian topological phases by taking what's kind of neat. You take for an action, you take the Chern-Simons term plus just the E squared term of electromagnetism, skip the B squared, and then when you go to the Hamiltonian, the Chern-Simons term doesn't result in any Hamiltonian, affects the canonical commutation relations, but doesn't do anything to Hamiltonian, and then basically you can write this in a form E dagger E. So in fact, this is, again, the exact same form that of the things I've been talking about. So this gives you, in fact, as its ground state, the double Chern-Simons theory that, Mike Friedman's been talking about, I guess we'll talk about next week. And again, it's the same deal. E annihilates the ground state, so the ground state is independent, doesn't have any electric flux, and so forth. Doesn't have any chiral electric flux. Okay, sorry for running over. Thanks.
You were going to give us a table.
Oh, yeah, since I ran so, I feel, I kind of ran into Mike's time, so I'll put that on afterwards. Yeah, it's a short list. I said everything that's in the table, but it summarized it. But since I've ran into enough of Mike's time, I'll write it down after if people want to see it. Yeah.
So I guess for kind of one thing to have examples, you know, for example, the AKLT state has the same correlation to the 1D Cascal state.
Right, right.
But of course it's non-generic, right? So you switch on a bit of the perturbation, ratio, you restore, in that case, in the structure function to simple pole over or branch cut, you restore proper 1 plus 1 dimensionality.
But on the other hand, the same would.
You couldn't take that as a model of a generic one-dimensional, one-plus-one-dimensional.
Well, no, but for example, the AKLT gets the fact that there's a gap, right? And there's no phase transition when you go off the AKLT. So the point is, it's a good guide to what's going on in that region of parameter space, if you wish. So it is a special point. But so the idea here is to do the same. But the problem is, we don't even have. You know, these are the only examples of models where we at least think we understand what's going on. So yes, in real life they're too fine-tuned, but
you have a critical point here where there's critical behavior.
Right, there's critical behavior. No, in fact, this certainly is non-generic in the 2+1 sense. Now, but this is the hope is that it's generic for theories in topological phases. So all these are like this.
So would all topological phases be something like disorder points?
That's sort of the approach everyone's doing. I mean, basically, Zhao Gan's talk last week, well, he can say it's probably better than I can, basically is this attempt to generalize Kataev's point to, you know, a whole huge family of them. That's basically, you know, what Chaitan and Mike and all that group is doing, too. Basically, it's all trying to generalize this physics, but I think so far it's fair to say all the physics we've seen at least is fair to characterize. This gets the physics of those phases right. I mean, these are generalized versions. So it's generic topological phases. It's highly non-generic in 2D. What's generic in 2D is the boring ordered phases, but so it goes.
Yeah, but when you apply some perturbation to the topological phases, presumably you don't destroy them.
No, because, right, that's, that. Yes, I'm agreeing with you. You don't destroy them. Yeah. That's right, presumably, although there's.
So then it's not true that all topological phases would be like disordered points. It would just be the special ones you can handle.
Well, they're near the disordered points. That's the idea.
Your disordered point is a property of the excited spectrum, and you're supposed to look at that under his definition of topological phase. You're supposed to look at the low energy limit.
Yeah.
Like getting the edge, the fourfold degeneracy of the edge state.
Right.
The AKLT model, that which is generic.
Right. So right. So that's the hope. I mean, we've got no proof of any of this, but.
So let's thank Paul again.